Alright, I think we're on. We're gone live. How you doing, Z?
Doing good, bud. How you doing today, Coach?
Doing alright, man. Alright, so today we're going to be talking a lot about educating people into the BOA mentality and the BOA process of I guess, the BOA method of thinking. For all of you guys that are just going to be tuning in on this, this is Zelvin Winfield. He has a BS in environmental biology, actually a really educated guy, and he's one of the foremost instructors in BOA here in the facility in Westminster, Colorado. I've worked with Z for, I don't know, how long have I worked with you?
Almost 4 years at this point.
Okay, so we've been together for a long time here in this athletic journey, and there's been some evolution, and this particular podcast is about that evolution. And you know what pushed the evolution, guys, immediately, and it pushed it incredibly hard, is COVID. COVID pushed the evolution. We went from all these massive shows to for fighters all over the place, like 5 big shows here in Colorado by itself. You had Strikeforce, you had all these that shows that led up to the UFC. Well, today we got reduced down to, excuse me, to very few shows. There's less and less fighters, less and less MMA fighters entering the scene on the typical gym scale, and we had to start making a move to address that as quickly as possible. 20 years ago, I started building this system in my mind and on paper, and today we decided collectively as a team to start making a launch for the BOA workout system. Z himself has got fights in his background and has been a tremendous trainer here in the facility, and I'm excited to see where he can go. So you're going to hear from Z, this is just what we fondly call him in short, on a regular basis throughout these episodes. And then later today, we're going to do a recording with Courtney Foster, who is also one of the instructors and who has an extensive fight background, who is going to be bringing her knowledge to the BOA training table. So first of all, you know, if we can just dive right into this, Z, and what we'll talk about is the intro to BOA and what it's, what you think it's going to bring to people. Like, you're not me, so you didn't invent the system,
right?
But you kind of bought into the system, and so I'd like to get your input and talking to people that may be new to the idea of BOA and talking about what that might mean for them.
Yeah, so BOA is like an all-inclusive system that kind of incorporates a mixture of strongman competition, a little bit of Olympic lifting, and a little bit of CrossFit. I think it just really gives people an avenue to kind of pick their lane and how they want to approach getting themselves in the best shape possible. I'm a firm believer in everybody should strive to be the best version of themselves in whatever aspect that is in life, whether you're a farmer or you're a cook, you're a nurse, you're a doctor. It doesn't really matter. I think that one of the most important things as a human being is to always strive for improvement and growth. And I think that's what really BOA really incorporates in the system, is like to grow, not only increasing your weight or being able to up your repetition from 5 to 10 to 30 to 50, whatever the thing may be, but you can carry that over into your lifestyles. You can carry it over into your family life, and you can carry it over into your work and how you interact and deal with people. You can be a beacon of inspiration for people when they see that no matter how difficult it is to do something, to get yourself in the gym, to lift these weights, or no matter how tired you are, you know, you push through it. And that's just kind of how life is in general. Is, you know, you don't want to go to work all the time. You don't want to interact with people all the time. You want to kind of shell up and kind of put yourself in the hole. But people admire the fact that you can come in, day out, and be consistent and working out and striving to be a better person. And I kind of really gel with that idea because, you know, I'm nobody special. I came from a poor to lower middle class home, and, you know, statistically speaking, I wasn't supposed to make it out of my hometown, let alone go to college and graduate and, you know, accomplish the things that I've accomplished. And but with that being said, it can you know, help invigorate other people that don't have anything special about, or seemingly don't have anything special about them. And that's the great thing about BOAS, because when you're in this gym and you're working out, whether it be 30 minutes to an hour, you know, you got coach sitting here screaming at you to lift these weights, and it's all inspiring because everybody jumps on the boat to see you lift this weight. You know, whether you lift it or not, people slap you on the back and give you the inspiration to keep trying and to keep going and to persevere. And I really admire that about this gym and the kind of culture that Coach Sullivan has created in here. And that's kind of what kind of bought me into the BOA system in the beginning.
Right on. Hey, so I had to jump in, and I think your metaphorical definition of CrossFit as being something in here is definitely something that rings a bell. But we're still working on how to define this. And
right.
Getting people to understand it has been very challenging. You're going to hear in the background some people boxing, and that's going to be part of this because we're actually in the gym today, guys. So in Buddhism, there's this idea of how to speak to people that you cannot speak to somebody who doesn't have the same level of enlightenment. So it's important to understand the definition of enlightenment as we're using it right now. Knowing yourself. So if we try to speak to somebody that has a basic math education on a super high level math education, this is going to sound like nonsense, and it's going to be very, very difficult and challenging, and you're going to lose the person right away in most cases. In BOA, it's the same thing. We have people walking in that are going to do this, that are looking to do this initial health and fitness and possibly jump in and become a fighter and have growth in their life. Well, if we explain it in its whole absolute form, what I find is that people get really intimidated and get really confused on what it is. And so what Z was trying to do is try to break it down to something that people understand. So yes, CrossFit is a mix of several different sports that are tracked. And so, in a form, this is very similar to that. But the difference that we have from CrossFit, and I think this is an important conversation to bring up, is that we participate in every sport in the method that sport's participated in when it comes to competitions. And whether that be in volume of weight lifted or in the absolute weight lifted, right? So, and that includes mixed martial arts, because mixed martial arts is a big part of this. The cool thing is, like, this being a mixed martial arts kind of program, or I could say that it's being an Olympic lifting kind of program or a powerlifting kind of program, it's an inclusive extreme sport program for sure. For people that are really trying to find a way to find something inside themselves that they don't get a showcase every day in an office. I know guys that sell office furniture. Can you believe that?
It's crazy.
That's crazy. Like, life has gone by, 30 years been selling office furniture. I mean, how much office furniture do you think gets thrown away in a lifetime? It just goes out of style, right? Remember those old desks from the 60s, the old chairs from the 60s, the roller belts that weighed like 700 pounds?
Dude, those desks were so freaking heavy. I remember my little brother hitting me with one of those things. I thought I had a concussion.
It's crazy talk. So just think about spending your life selling something that's going to go out of fashion. I'm not bagging on that person, but you know and I know that somewhere deep inside, he knows this too and would like to get something more fulfilling out of life other than just paying bills so he can continue to go to work at a job where he's not real excited to be. And so I read a statistic recently that said that somewhere up to 80% of the planet's not happy. That's a tremendous amount of people to not be happy. And when we're talking about what it takes to be happy, I think that's a confusing conversation for a lot of people. Sometimes just content is considered happy. I don't know if anybody walks around just feeling just emotions.
Right.
I don't do that. But maybe content?
Absolutely. I think the problem is, it's like with the introduction of social media, it kind of gives this false sense of everybody kind of being happy, and that's just not the case. It's like we show the best parts of ourselves on social media because we fear showing our everyday life of struggling, having to work a 9-to-5, dealing with family and friends and things like that. And so with that being said, it's like it kind of has a double-edged sword to it, because you see that and you reflect on yourself. I'm like, why am I not as happy as this person that I see on my screen? And then it's also, it gives off this false emotion that these people are tremendously happy and they're not. So it kind of brings you down a little bit further, realizing like, well, what am I doing with my life? Why am I not as happy as this person that I'm seeing on the screen? And I think it just boils down to what we're discussing right now. It's just, there's not a lot of fulfillment. People get stuck in a cycle and they never really figure out what their purpose is. And they do get used to paying bills and paying your taxes. And then you do have to take care of a family if that's something that you choose to have. And you just kind of get warped into the sense of life and in a routine, and you never get to climb Mount Everest. You never get to run to Moab. You never go deep sea diving. You never run across the country. You never do these things, these magnificent feats, because you feel like, well, I don't have time. I have too many responsibilities. And I feel like that you make time for what you want to make time for.
I think time's a good, pretty crazy thing, because I think it's a, all right, so we have a misnomer of time. I don't have time, right? But in the end, who knew that that would be absolutely true? You don't have time. You can run out of youth.
100%.
Right? So I tell people all the time that you spend almost your entire life old. So I'm knocking on 51 years old now. I don't want to be done. It doesn't mean that I think I'm making the Olympic team. It doesn't mean I think I'm going to beat this kid that has no way out of a horrible life other than boxing or football. It doesn't mean I think I'm going to beat those guys. It just means I'm not done, that I want to do something that I'm proud of me for. I want to do something that maybe inspires some other people and gets them off their ass and gets them up to live a better life with and do more interesting things than simply to go to work and go home and go to sleep and wait to die. And I hate to boil people down to that simplistic thing, but outside of the challenge of just making money, I don't see people doing a lot anymore besides maybe picking up bad habits like alcohol addictions, sugar addictions, or in my case, a caffeine addiction.
I just think people have adopted a nihilistic view of life. And when you boil it down to the fact of working, eating, and then sleeping, and then dying, I mean, that's exactly what a lot of people do. I strive so hard not to do that. I don't want to be 50, 60 years old, and I'm completely out of shape, and I have nothing to show for, no legacy of my own. I'm all about building legacy, because there wasn't one built before me.
Right.
This is why this program is so important, because it does push you to your limits. It forces you to push yourself to the extremes that you didn't know you can push yourself to. And that's very important. And I think a lot of people die without reaching any type of potential, let alone their full potential, because, like we said, they get used to this monotonous grind of life. And people get scared to take a chance. And I think people are scared to fail. You know, when we're young, we fail all the time. We fall, we trip, we fall on our head trying to learn how to do a cartwheel. But the repetition of keep trying, you eventually learn how to walk. You eventually don't trip over yourself. You eventually learn how to do a cartwheel or walk on your hands. But people, I hear oftentimes, I can't do that. Well, that's most of the battle, is the mentality. It's saying that I can do it. And people just beat themselves up and say, I can. And it starts before people even get to the gym. That's why you don't have more people living a healthier lifestyle. They defeat themselves before they even get there. They're like, oh, well, my knee is bad. Well, my shoulder's bad. I've had surgery.
Yeah, we just heard that, right?
But we just heard that. And I'm like, I can't count how many injuries that I have that nag me every day. I'm pretty sure you have the same issue as well.
Constant
injuries.
Yeah, constant injuries. So injuries is going to be part of the deal. We get people walking in. So you guys that are tuning in and listening to the BOA podcast, where we're molding ourselves into this new image of body of armor, of BOA, and we're coming from the fight world. Primarily from the fight world, and the fight world has the cross training world in it. So we had to send fighters to the mountains to run and to get into swimming pools and swim. And then it just started dawning on us, like, let's start competing in house on these events. And coming from the fight world and talking about all these limitations that you're talking about, I would hear limitation after limitation of people coming in, whether it be age based, time based, family ring based, PTSD, everybody has PTSD now. And I'm on this medication, that medication based, I'm too old based. And I hear too old coming from people that are like 27 years old. And I'm telling you, life hurts. Life's painful. To be alive is, the longer you're going to be alive, it's going to hurt. But if you have a functioning working body, I really think that you need to look around at some people that weren't even gifted that and are maybe stuck in a wheelchair or have a leg that's 4 inches shorter than the other one and can't run. I was having a conversation about athletics the other day with a friend of mine, and I was talking about Usain Bolt and Ben Johnson. I absolutely huge fan of track and field. I love the idea of the athleticism. I love watching football combines because I like seeing how fast these people can take off and run and cut. And it's amazing to me, mostly because I can't do it like that, right? So that's what makes it amazing. So back in my day, when I was a sprinter, I was aspiring to the levels of Carl Lewis and Ben Johnson and trying to make that level. But as a Caucasian sprinter, it's unlikely that we're ever going to be able to catch those speeds. And there's some anatomical differences that make that a reality. But that doesn't mean that you give up. And what I find that Caucasian athletes would do is just quit. But it was never about, I mean, how many of you thought you were, I would think this when they quit. I'm like, did you really think you were making the Olympic team? I'm like, you can't even just try competing. You have to have a chance to make it to the Olympic team. But how many people of every color in the world don't make it to the Olympic team?
Right.
It's almost nobody. There's just a small percentage make it in specialized sports. And, you know, that particular type of human has that one kind of locked down for now until everybody gets more mixy. So that's just kind of what it looks like. But I want people that weren't going to make it to the Olympic Training Center in their sport, because I'm not going to market a business to that 0.1% of humans that can run as fast as Ben Johnson and Usain Bolt.
They already have it down.
Yeah, they're not interested in anything else. And I wouldn't even ask one of those guys to even sprint. I'd be too worried he'd hurt himself upon my request. So, and going and training with him doesn't help. I can run with Usain Bolt all day. I'm not going to be as fast as him, right?
It's just not going to happen.
And so appreciating him for his amazing gifts is a thing, and I think you should be able to do that. Just appreciate them for their amazing gifts and let him go to work and do what he does and just be awesome like he is and cut it. But for everybody else, I want them to have a piece of that as well. Don't give up because you weren't going to become the world's strongest man, because you weren't going to become the world's fittest person, because you weren't going to be the best swimmer in the world. That doesn't mean quit. That just means try. Compete really with yourself, and then maybe when you get better, you start competing more on an in-house level with competing on with other people in the facility and competing with people outside of the facility in the BOA sport activity, which is an incredibly massive cross-training opportunity for people. So What this gives it, you know, while we have this slight lull in this conversation here, and I just wanted to, you know, make sure that we touched on to the point that absolutely you're right. People just kind of give up because they have a billion reasons why not. One of them is they weren't going to be as fast as the world's fastest human. The other one is they hurt their shoulder in seventh grade, right? We can have just a plethora of bad excuses on why a person would want to go back and just do the same routine over and over again until they finally die. And I'm sorry, I'm an extremist on this. I look at even home ownership sometimes as just owning a preliminary coffin, because it's just a box you live in kind of a dead state in between your work before you really go to the big show and actually die and go into a coffin.
That's a very interesting way to look at it.
Right, and I'm kind of an asshole about that.
No, our society is built for you to do these things, and you'd be like, okay, well, I did this. I'm like, okay, I'm happy for a little while. I bought a nice car. You work your nice job. I'm like, okay, I got a nice career. And then I'm buy a house. I'm like, okay, I have a nice house. But then after that, it's all downhill.
Yeah,
it's all downhill after that. It's what's the next goal?
What's next? Like, what did you really do that makes you excited on a daily basis to be alive, right?
And every 2 weeks you get a paycheck?
Every 2 weeks you get this paycheck. That's not very good. And if you look at like The Rock's Instagram page, you'll feel bad about your paycheck.
You feel bad about your life.
Yeah. When I look at The Rock, I feel bad about the way I look.
Right.
I didn't get blessed. I watched a lot of girls come into the Fuse Box program, the fight program here in Westminster, Colorado, and through the BOA program here in Westminster, Colorado. I watch a lot of young girls come in, and just everybody's on medication now. And I'm watching a lot of low-level suffering from depression because they're not the prettiest or the tallest or the whateverest that they're thinking of. I watch blonde people complain about brunette people, and brunette people complain about blonde people. And everybody wants to be whatever they're not.
Right.
And everybody that I'm talking to, for the most part, I think everybody's a strong word, but a lot of people just really think it's unique to them, and it's not. I don't mind flexing in the mirror, for example, but I'm not going to flex next to Dwayne Johnson. You know, I got to know where and when to do this. Like, he's better looking, smarter, more money, better body, funnier, probably more stable mental condition overall. And he won. Congratulations. It's super awesome. Somebody got that. That's really great. I'm glad that somebody got that. And getting to that place is a tremendous relief in personal development. But this program has brought a lot of hope to me to be able to start competing again in something that is more mixed in the way it's presented than a pure sport, because I cannot beat Carl Lewis, probably even today, in a sprint, right?
Right.
You can pull out a guy that's actually older than me that's a sprinter and I can't beat. He's probably 60. But I certainly can't beat Usain Bolt. But if you put me up against Usain Bolt on a lifting competition, I'm pretty sure I can crush Usain Bolt on a lifting competition, right? I don't think I could have beat Ben Johnson in a lifting competition, by the way. He was a different sprinter overall. He was a real thick guy. But if we put me up against him in rock climbing and martial arts and all this other stuff, then you get to see the truly mixed fashion in which people really shine, instead of looking at it from this completely thin slice of reality. We're trying to broaden the band of sports reality and look at who's the baddest dude or woman on the planet. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the one that can do everything as well as almost everybody that is on the top of each one of those independent sports.
Right.
And bring that to the forefront of the regular world, and then showcase these individuals in their attempt and their efforts, and wipe out the excuses of my shoulder had a surgery 42 years ago, or my foot got hurt when I was riding my bike when I was 7 years old. I don't want to hear these things outside of the first initial consultation, and then we're going to work through it. But you as a coach here have experienced as much as I have on people just throwing limitations down and not wanting to excel, and then wandering out and then recreating the same old patterns that made them so unhappy in the first place.
I think the reason why we resonate so well with each other is because we do understand that coming from a fight culture where, let's be real here, you're hurt all the time. You might not be injured, but you're at least hurt all the time. And I think people fail to realize is that when these pro athletes, whether you're a boxer or you're an MMA fighter or you're a kickboxer, like the state of your body is never 100%. It's never 100%. And so with that being said, we just have a different mentality about how we go about getting the job done.
So you're right. We're always hurt 100%. And this is where I have people come in and say, you know what? I hate to be injured ever, right? And I don't want to. I've had men come in and say, I can't hurt my hands. And I'm like, well, honey, then you need to leave. Because you might hurt your hands because you're doing something. You might hurt your hands in your lawn. I don't know. But when you're saying that people come in and they're scared to get hurt, and I'm saying that we're all slightly injured at all times. I'm hurt right now. That's just the way it is. We have these short periods of time when you're training whatever it is that you're not, that you feel really, really good. But I don't think if you don't train, you ever feel good. I think you're confused into that baseline shitty feeling as being a good feeling.
Oh, 100%. People, I'm guilty of it just as much as anybody else, but eating fast food and just being like, oh, well, you know, this is how I'm supposed to feel. You know, this is my body and this is my energy level. This is my life, my digestion. And that is so not the case. That is so not the case. And you don't know, because most people don't get past the initial couple weeks of being sore and working out, so they can see like, oh my goodness, I have so much energy now at work, being able to get these tasks done. I have a little bit more mental clarity. And it's because you have all these nice chemicals being released when you work out, and they make you feel good. And not only that, when you do something that you've never done before and you accomplish a goal, man, the rush that you get from it is just amazing. But people do get used to pretty much just feeling crappy, and they think that's how they're supposed to feel. People don't research into taking probiotics or cleaning up their diet, seeing what the newest research is on health and diet, what works best for them, what deficiencies they have. And we just kind of walk around like zombies, and you shouldn't do that. You definitely shouldn't do that. You should find the motivation to want to feel better and be like, okay, what is this body really made out of? Like, what can I really do with this thing? Because I'm curious, you know. I'm 28 years old, and I'm just not starting to have that light bulb switch off in my head. Like, let's see what this thing can really do. Like, what's the limits of my body and my mental capacity to push it? Like, what are my limits? It's what I'm very curious about now.
It's, I wonder if some of that comes from having older coaches. If you had, because I've watched young coaches in here try to teach older people stuff. And you can teach, I think as a coach that's younger, you can teach technique.
100%.
But then I've heard young coaches try to explain to mothers of four, and the coaches don't have kids, how to parent.
Right.
And I've heard it for myself, because I have several children of my own, and people without kids go, well, I think this is what you should do if you have kids. And I'm like, you don't even have an idea. You don't have no idea. The tests that come with this, you're going to be gifted with a child that is everything you can't handle. That's for sure. And what you can't handle, what I found in my case, is the things I couldn't handle was me in them. All the stuff that I didn't like about me was in them. And so what do? I start trying to break them because I don't like me?
Right.
You know, and so when it comes to creating this light bulb environment that you were talking about, I wonder if having an older coach helped with that, because I really show you that there's a limitation in time.
Oh, one. I mean, it's so apparent. And but to your case, you know, you were, what, 47, 48 when you won the Pans? You won gold?
48 years old when I won the Pan American.
Yeah, that's how many people can say they did that? You know, it's a phenomenal feat, and it just holds true that, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are. Like, how many competitors have you had that were like, well, I'm 30 something years old, and they go out and accomplish great things, they win gold medals, they get to travel the world, and it's all because they thought they were done. And you know, you being a little bit older, it does kind of put a lot of things in perspective and kind of give you a preview of what could be. And you inspire me every day. I'm like, well, I hope I'm in half as good a shape as you when I'm 50 years old, or take care of myself half as good.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm over here watching this guy do his hand cleans. He actually is impressing me. So those of you that are just listening in, we're in here getting ready. We're at the Fusebox facility at Samba One. We're getting ready to do the podcast. And I had seen this cat in the gym one other time. And then, I don't know, looks to me like he's from the Hawaiian Islands. And so he's in there and he's like banging away on the bag the other day. And I'm in my gym and I don't I don't know who he is. And I'm like, oh, he's working. I'm going to leave him alone. Like, he's doing exactly, it's not like he's falling asleep in the corner or something. He's just, he's on the bag and he's working hard. And now I'm over here, he's training actually while we're doing the podcast. And I'm looking over and he's got perfectly beautiful, clean form, Olympic lifting form as well. So I thought that was super cool and impressive to see somebody come in on their own and work with good form on everything they've done so far. So I'm super impressed. Turns out he is a member, and I only met him over the phone. And got to be honest, I pictured a little white guy. Wasn't even close. So anyways, in the past, I just kind of was like, whoever this guy is, he's just going to work, and he's not bothering anybody, so I just left it be. So the BOA program, in my attempts to continue to explain it to people, we're talking about getting people in the facility through level one, which is about getting you strong enough to do anything at all. So some people can come in skilled enough to go level two or three right away, which means they understand Olympic lifting, strongman lifting, kettlebells, they understand power lifting, and they understand combine lifts like we use in America in the NFL. It means that they understand how to do bag work. So we don't do katas on the floor like they do in karate or anything like that per se, but we do bag combinations and things of that nature that are going to help people develop footwork. And your head movement comes from where?
Footwork.
Footwork, right? So we have to develop really good footwork to begin with, and that's what level one is about, developing the base skills to move on bags, whether the bags be on the ground for grappling or the bags be hanging for striking, footwork on the ground, strength in your calves, capability to hang with the rest of the class, and then we go on to level two. Level two is a compliance partner training. So now we're talking about doing drills, holding mitts, we're talking about doing groundwork, submission techniques, drills. We're not fighting each other. Then we go on to level three. Now we're talking about non-compliant partner work. So now we're competing. We're grappling for submissions. We're going for takedowns. And it takes an individual as long as it takes an individual to go from level one to level three. You'd agree?
100%. I mean, we're all built different. We're all built completely different. Some people are just naturally more athletic and can pick up things. Like, I knew doing martial arts was my sport because I could watch something or see something. I'm like, oh, I can do that. Like, and I can replicate it almost immediately. Some things come slower than others, but for the most part, I feel like that's kind of how it is. You progress at your own speed. I think people slow their own progression down by just not being consistent. I think consistency is the biggest thing. Like, if you stop lifting weights for a month, you're not going to have that same strength you did before you stopped lifting weights. It's just not how it goes. And it's the same thing with, like, with any skill that you're trying to build. You have to do it consistently. You have to make sure you show up, and you show up on time, and you show up ready to work. I think that's the biggest component of this program.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there's this other thing that happens that I make a joke about on the floor. Women come in here, and it turns out they're twice as strong as they thought they were.
Oh, yes.
And men come in here, and it turns out they're half as strong as they thought they were, right? Because men will come in and just explode themselves.
Right, they think they're just going to go and squat 400 pounds right off the rip.
Yeah, or we had this guy right here on the board, Josh, and he comes in, and he does on his first day, this is his first day on deadlifts, he does 14,025 pounds in 10 minutes. I was like, hey, man, you might want to, you know, chill out. It's your first day. His wife comes in the next couple of days, and she's like, he's so sore, he can barely move. And he's like frozen in place. And luckily, he just works on a computer. So he gets out of bed, and he gets, with her help, to the computer, and then he bends his body into the fetal position that you sit in because you have to surrender to do a job that you don't like to do, right? And so he's like fetaled into this position, and he starts working, and then he freezes in it. And he's just locked in it and then has to get help to move himself out. I'm like, man, I warned you. I told you, don't do that. Like, if you had come in and just did like 16 deadlifts, you would have been sore.
But you would have been able to move the next day.
Right. And when's the last time you did any of this as an average person? Almost never. And we're not, just so you guys know, we're not like Vasa or 24 Hour Fitness. We're not, there's no guys in here going to be putting glitter on. There's no glittery lotion on dudes and you know, that short Italian guy that has his eyebrows done perfectly. There's none of that here. None of that ego is in here. This is performance-based stuff. This is people really trying to make a dent in their life, really trying to exercise what time that they have to live, because it's finite, right? We only have so much in the long run, but we don't know when it's going to come to a close. And so taking advantage of it, that's what this is about.
Yeah, you got... Do you have 50 years? Do you have 40? Do you have 60?
You even going to make it home tonight?
Who knows?
Right.
But what I do know is that the day that I die, I don't want people to look at my legacy and how I live my life and they say, well, I don't think he lived up to his full potential. I feel like he could have did more. I don't ever want this said over my grave. I don't know about anybody else. But there are things said about you when you die.
Yeah.
If people take a very close look at your life, and especially now, I'm like, oh, damn, he died yesterday. Let's pull up his Facebook and social media so I can find out what do I need to say about him. And I want people to have a mouthful to say about me. Oh, he climbed the highest mountains, or he attempted to run the Moab, or he went and chased his dreams of fighting, or he went in bodybuilding and he loved it. He wasn't the best at it, but he did. I want people to be inspired when I die to do things that I did or not, but be better. Be the best at whatever it is that you do. But I know that in this gym, it can give people an outlet that they never thought that they had before. It doesn't take anybody special to lift these weights. You got two arms, you got two legs. I feel like you can do it, you know?
Yeah.
Anything can be worked around, but I don't want to die today, tomorrow, or 20, 30 years from now, and people say, well, he didn't even try.
Yeah, folks, you heard something that Z had said there that seemed to be pretty expansive. And when we're talking about enlightenment and people not understanding what we're saying, what he just said was something I understood completely, but maybe you didn't. And if you didn't, here's an explanation. He wants to climb the highest mountain. He wants to run from here to Moab or Moab to here. Guys, that's not a joke. And that's also not off. He hasn't lost the plot. This is the way it works. This is a martial arts facility, absolutely. But what we've done is just take the cross training to the next level. So how many miles do you have to run as a fighter? And hey, guys, by the way, how many of you are even going to be fighters? And how many really trained martial artists are professional fighters? There's not a lot.
There really isn't.
There really isn't. So I think in a lot of cases, you're probably better off to have that humdrum job, but you don't have to live a humdrum life. And so I wouldn't recommend for everybody to try to become a professional fighter. That's not the way to go. But when somebody comes in here and they're like, listen, I'm not going to go to college. I have no interest. I didn't do very well in school. They're innately just good at fighting, and they don't have a lot of other prospects. We might as well go for it if they're young. You might as well. And then there's other people that are really, really have a lot of potential and capability that come in. And I feel like maybe getting continuous concussions isn't the thing that we need to do with them. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because even myself, it turns out that I'm not the world's greatest professional fighter. There's guys out there just tougher than me. And I've heard Adrian Mora, two-time world champion boxer, came into the gym. He said he's never been knocked out. I was like, well, I have. Right? So I've been knocked out quite a bit. I was impervious to knockouts until I got knocked out.
Right, all, you get knocked out all the time.
Now, so it's kind of a mystery. So I think it has a little bit to do with salt content in the body and water.
Oh, 100%. That blood-brain barrier, if you suck all that water out your body, it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. So we take all this into consideration. I am interested in teaching people how to fight. And so we're talking about self-defense even sometimes. I had a guy come in here and he wants to learn self-defense. And by the way, when women want to learn self-defense, I usually say no. Not interested in doing that because it's a lifestyle. I can't give you a seminar. But if you want to commit years of training to becoming a capable fighter and understanding the art of war itself, that's different. A seminar, I can't help you. Man, I can't beat Mike Tyson right now in a boxing match. I don't think I'm going to be able to teach you how to do it in 3 hours on a seminar.
It's just not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. So what we can talk about is, what I tell people when it comes to self-defense in the BOA system is, like, avoid the three S's. Stupid people, stupid places, stupid things. You mostly have it figured out. Like, with America being in unrest right now and people getting killed all over the place, you know, 90% of the evasion of that is just don't go downtown. right? You watch these idiots fighting on both sides and they're just back and forth and beating on each other. Well, you had to fucking arrive to do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the drama of it, is most of the time when people get themselves in trouble, they put themselves there. There's sometimes it's unfortunate for people to get caught up in the mix, but a lot of times you drove downtown.
Right. You have an inkling of what is about to happen most
right.
of the time when you arrive at a certain place, area, and time.
Absolutely. I got jumped by, I don't know if they were skinheads, they had shaved heads, they were white, and they they kept saying that and they kept saying stuff like, you know, calling me a fag and stuff like that. And those of you that know me know I'm not always hard-edged all the time. I have a softer side to me, and I don't just bump into people downtown like a dude. I'm kind of passive. I can brush past people gently, and that's what I did. That's what set these guys off. I just kind of passed. Just for the hindsight of this, I was at a Hinder and Nickelback concert, and I don't I don't drink, right? And because I had the gym, sometimes marketing companies hook me up with these sweet deals, and I have this private booth, and they're just bringing me beers. I had 8 beers. I don't drink. And I slammed 8 beers in this Nickelback concert. And some people are like, whoa, that's like Wednesday.
Right. That's after work.
Yeah, that is not me. So I was crushed walking out. Like, I could see guys were wanting to punch me just on the way out because how drunk I was. And so I was like, so I told my wife at the time, this little Korean lady, and I'm like, we gotta go feed me. And I've got one of my students, Sean Doherty, that was with me at the time, and he had no fights at this point. Turned out to be one of the best fighters that I've ever made. Had some records on tap outs. Ended up like jumping an arm bar at the end of a round off a jab, but the guy didn't tap because the bell rang. And then the guy came out and threw a jab. The next round, he jumped up and caught it again and tapped him. So it's like Sean was a crazy amount of potential, lives in China now, got married, and I'm going to say it out loud. I told him in person in America when she came here, dump this cow. So like, she was an evil person. Guys, evil person. I told her about some of the things we'd see going on in China with human rights, and she goes, what does that matter to us? It's not our kind of people, it's theirs. And I'm like, oh my God, Sean, you got to ditch this chick. I hope she gets hit by a car in the parking lot. She was just absolutely horrible. So anyways, he did what guys do and fucking married her. So now we're at this stage, and I'm like, I'm with Sean Doherty downtown, and I asked everybody in this car, I'm like, don't take me downtown, take me to suburbia, give me to Village Inn in Westminster or something. I wake up at Pete's Kitchen in Denver, Colorado. And I'm like, God. And so I walk in, right? And we go in, and the grease is so thick. It's a Saturday night. The place is just crushed, right? It would never go today in COVID's world. It was just crushed. And I'm in. I'm like, I can't even order, guys. I got to leave. It's too greasy in here. And I went out, and I sat on this little curb that's directly to the west front of the building. And then as I sat down, I was in disbelief as 4 sneakers go scooch, scooch, underneath my vision with my head down. And I hear something about being a faggot. And then they just started throwing bombs. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so drunk. And I just kind of covered my mandible, right? I just didn't want my jaw hinge to get broke. I was going to let them punch out in this call of the day when they got tired.
Right.
Well, Doherty, being the friend he is, comes out to check on me. And he's like, hey, you guys, get off of him. And he like chest bumps him, like runs into him, boom, right? And I remember going, fuck, now I have to get up. And so I started working my way up. And I'm like, now I've got Sean here. Now it's a fight. As where before, I was just going to let him punch out. I mean, I'm a fighter. I get hit all the time. Like, what's 20 more? You know, I'm just going to let it go. And so Sean's out here. So now I have to be defensive. Right? And so this has a little bit to do with Boa, because I went to a Nickelback concert, and now I'm in a group attack situation with possibly skinheads that I don't understand why. And knowing how to fight is a huge calmer in this, because I'm not really concerned at this point.
Right, you're not having the red flash just fly off and it's like, oh shit, I don't know what to do.
Right, yeah. It's like, if you go mountain climbing, you don't want to start looking at YouTube at the moment you get stuck on the side of the cliff.
Yeah,
right?
It's
too late. So long story short, this whole thing took about 12 minutes. we get squared up. These guys are like, get out of here now. We're with the Irish Mafia or whatever. And I'm like, oh, really? That's weird. Okay. So I'm like, listen, we can't leave without my wife. I'm sorry. I have to go back and get her and his girlfriend. Then we'll get out of here, right? And then we'll leave because I don't want to eat here anyways. And they're like, no, you're going to leave him here. And I'm like, you know what? Probably not going to do that, guys. So I need to get back in, get him. And then, well, anyway, Sean's girlfriend walks out, who has no fight experience at all. And so she immediately turns into a horror movie chick. She's like, screaming in the corner, out of her mind, up against the side of the building. And I said, Sean, don't look at her. Sean looks at her. Guy goes, clink, knocks him out. Falls onto the floor, bangs his head. I step over the top of his body, and I'm like, I don't really want to do this because I don't want him to wake up and get confused and kick me in the groin, but I don't want them to jump on him either.
Right.
So I made the call, stepped over his body, and she ran back in. I could see her out of my peripheral run back in. Well, she went back in to get Keisha, the Korean woman, right? Now, when I say little Korean lady, she comes in kind of a hot package. She's all sorts of vocal. So she runs out, and I can see her from the side of my eyes. I see the white of her eyes. And I'm like, oh, no, man, I'm in trouble because she's making a face. I can tell. and she's like, what are you doing? And I remember going, I didn't start it, right? And so I said that out loud. I'm not sure what I'm doing here yet. I'm super, super drunk. And then it dawned on me she wasn't talking to me. She was talking to them. And the guys turned and looked at her. And she goes, run. You're going to die. Run. And she's screaming as loud as she can. And I'm like, why is she yelling these things? Like, I haven't put it together yet. But all of a sudden it dawned on me they looked at her. So now I know that they know who she is.
Right.
So me getting knocked out isn't an option anymore. Because now she's in danger. My drunkenness just went and sucked up. It's just gone. I just hyper-focused. Now, I couldn't see peripherally, but I could see right in front of me, right? Sean had, by this point, popped back up. I step in front of Sean, and I throw the hardest roundhouse kick I can at this skinhead's head. I hit him so hard, I thought I missed and kicked a telephone pole.
Damn.
It hurt me so bad through my big, thick leather shoes that I had on. It turns out that my foot went into his mouth when he was looking that direction, broke his jaw open, and knocked out even his molars. Everything went spraying across the parking lot, which really confused me because I've got a child's brain, and I started immediately thinking of that Dennis the Menace movie when all those chiclets fell out of the guy's brain. And so I'm like, oh my God, you have chiclets? And I kind of got excited for a second because I was like drunk again. And then all of a sudden, chiclets are all over the place, and I looked up at the guy, and he's getting up off the ground, and he's getting off the ground in a weird way that I'm having a hard time putting together because he's kind of out of it. And I'm like, oh my God, you have those licorice lips. You know what I mean? You know those Coca-Cola licorice lips when we were kids? And I'm like, oh my God, I haven't seen those. And I'm like, wait a second, that's blood. And then sober again. And I'm throwing Sean on top of him. And Sean's like, Coach, no, please, no. And I'm like, kill him, finish it. Right? And I'm trying to get him to finish this job like a mother lion or something. And then the other guy, I look over, and he's got this helpless little I'm innocent look on his face. And I'm like, ah! And I look over at him. And then I just had mentioned in the beginning of this podcast how much I love track. I wasn't as fast as Carl Lewis. Wasn't as fast as Carl Lewis, but one of the things I love about Ben Johnson is somebody talked shit about to him in Canada, and then Ben Johnson beat him up, and I was like, well, what's he going to do, run?
Right.
There's nowhere to go in this situation, you know what I mean? So that's what I felt like. I'm like, oh my God, I get to be like Ben Johnson.
Sorry, I can catch him. I know I can.
This dude's going to try to run. How many times do you think the skinhead runs in a day?
Never.
Man, he made it out to the center of Colfax on Pete's Kitchen before I caught him. I must have hit him at 18 miles an hour. And so I came up behind him and kicked his legs out from underneath him hard. Just boom, just like a solid tie kick. Then when I spun and caught my balance in the middle of the street, I realized that I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 lanes of traffic in total stopped watching the show. I had no idea. And then I saw these terrified fat person little eyes next to me start to they start to appear as my tunnel vision went away. And there's a cop in his car with the lights on right next to me. I couldn't see it. I was so hyper-focused on this guy. Lights, this cop's holding onto his car door, staring at me. And I'm down to a wife beater t-shirt somehow, tank top somehow. And so, Z, I don't know if you knew this, but I've got a problem in my brain where I don't regulate insulin, or not insulin, but adrenaline well. It's nothing.
Or all the way.
All the way, right? And so I got a little spooked, apparently, in that confrontation, and I dumped it. So I become bigger because it sucked all the blood out of my organs. And Sean's like, "You're like the Hulk. Why are you bigger?" Like, he's just super confused young kid on why I'm like, "Wah!" and hulking out and veins are coming out all over the place because I have no control over this particular output of adrenaline.
Right.
And so I kick somebody in the mouth with a 1-inch thick sole on the bottom of the front of my shoe and a super 1/4-inch thick leather shoe. Pumping full of adrenaline and knowing how to kick.
Right.
And at the time, doing the world's, or like doing Scottish Games, was one of the strongest A and B athletes here in the state of Colorado at the time. So, like 235 pounds. But I kind of looked fat. And so it confused him. But in any case, so for Boa, it gave, I want people to have this kind of confidence in conflict. You could decide to go and climb a mountain in South America, and you don't know how to defend against knives, and you don't know what a threat looks like, I think you're asking for the problem that you could receive to be something that you can't handle.
Right.
I mean, you've been in bad situations. You know what it's like to feel the confidence of having the ability to fight back.
Oh, dude, it's nothing like it. And I don't want it to be misinterpreted like, oh, well, I'm the baddest guy in the world. No, I'd get my ass kicked if I walked out right now. But the thing is, it's like, it's called self-defense for a reason. You're not going to always walk away unscathed, but most of the time, if you know what you're doing, you walk away alive.
Alive, that's the trick, yeah.
That's the point, is to walk away alive. And people get that confused where, well, I'm just knocking people out and I'm dropping them and I can walk away from any street fight. Like, no, it's a survival mechanism. You don't know what you're dealing with out there on the streets. You don't know if somebody has a wrench or a bat, they have brass knuckles.
Right.
But regardless, I need to be prepared for that situation. Or it's the same thing if I'm stuck on top of a mountain and I drop everything that I need to get to the top and I'm like, I have to figure this out. It's having a confidence in conflict.
Living through it.
Living through it. And so with that being said, it's just like with any aspect of life, it's like your stress levels go down when you know what you're doing and your back is up against the wall because you're like, I can figure it out. I got it. You know, I've been in this situation before or I know how to get myself, into
a better starting one. In controlled situations, right?
Right. And so it's like, and a lot of times people lose, it's a loss of control. And then at that point, you're doomed. You're doing. You have no sense of control. I mean, it's already chaotic as it is if you're dealing with conflict or in a battle situation where you have to fight. But you know, to be able to minimize those risk factors, like, oh, I know how to move my head out the center line. I can throw a low kick. People don't expect me to kick them in the leg. Or I know how to punch. I know how to take somebody down and hold them down until it. All these things are important. Now, granted, if I didn't know how to do these things, I'd be in a very bad situation. I might have my head stomped out on the side of the road. But that's what we're trying to do is really push the issue that whether you're training to fight or self-defense or you're training to run across the country, you need to be prepared in all aspects. And I don't see anything wrong with being just an all-around, well-rounded individual. Like, there's nothing wrong with knowing how to shoot guns and know how to fight. You need both.
That's right.
You need both.
I think that's important stuff, Z, what you just said. So the BOA program takes us to, you may not be, at the end of this, the world's best fighter. But you may be.
Who knows?
Yeah, we could take you that route. If you show those things. Here's another situation. This is where that Buddhist idea that I came up with. It's really hard to talk about this stuff without making people think that whatever I say is just the stone and that's it.
Right. It's the end all be all.
Right. It's not. This is a pliable system. Even the ranking system is merit based and it's only chronological through level 1 through 3 and then the final one. That's it. You know, like, you're kind of like your black belt on the bottom. You got to work your way through the beginning stages so we understand that you understand the martial arts, the weightlifting, and the health and fitness portion of this. Now, there's other rankings in here like ultra runner. I find marathon running to be probably, I would rather watch golf, honestly, than a marathon. I'll watch the final 30 seconds, you know, the highlights of the marathon as they come in. Right. But I'm not going to put a marathon on even to do dishes, but I'll put golf on to do dishes or something. And with this, we may end up creating an ultra runner out of you that knows how to defend themselves. But if you're a woman and you're going to go jogging and you don't understand the art of war and you get dragged into the trees and killed or taken advantage of, well, we were trying to teach you to swim before you jumped in the rapids. And that's what this program kind of is a little bit about on some terms. But really, it's about becoming this amazing jack of all trades where we take the cross training and then we really expand upon that cross training. Then we measure it and compare it against yourself and where you were and other people around the world and where they are that are similar to you in age and in gender and things like this. So we can see where you are. So you can measure yourself in kind of an active social media group and in a positive way, removing the politics, removing any of the racial bullshit that goes on. We got to know. Now, so as far as the racial thing goes in athletics, we have to be cautious about talking about this. I'm a huge fan of watching black humans do things. Again, to the Dwayne Rock Johnson thing. Like, yeah, congratulations on being born so beautiful and like and all that stuff. That's really awesome. Wish it would have been me, but it wasn't. And congratulations to you, and thanks for not being a jerk on top of it. Sometimes humans are born in bodies that work better in certain situations than other bodies.
Right. 100%.
Yeah. And so I used to be real insecure about this. But now that I've gotten older, I'm just like, wow. I'll watch out here, there's this black gentleman that runs out here and he sprints every now and then. And it's such a pleasure to watch that sprint because it's not something I can do now.
Right.
And it's amazing to watch. I'm like, and there's a guy, I think, from probably Eastern Africa that runs across here every now and then doing like long distance running. And he's running long distance faster than I can sprint.
It's insane.
It's beautiful to watch. It's an amazing thing. So why can't we celebrate that? Right?
Right. As an athlete, I think, or just a human being that's like very self-aware and understand their place on the totem pole. When I see somebody like LeBron James, that's 6'8", 250 pounds, he's dribbling that ball and he flies through there, I'm just, I can't compete with that shit.
Yeah, like, congratulations, sir.
But it's so amazing, and I think people fail to take time to appreciate, you know, we have kind of have this this Schadenfreude type of ideology a lot of times is just like, well, I'm not really happy for your success. I'm not happy that you can do that because you know why? I can't do it. So it's like, screw you. And that's not the type of mentality that you should have. You should have that mentality to be inspired or at the very least appreciate it. Like, I can't do the things that these guys are doing out here on this track. I can't. I'm not a sprinter. Mm-hmm. I'm not a long distance runner. But I admire the fact that somebody spent a whole lot of time and effort getting really good at that.
Yeah.
And I think that's another aspect of the BOA program, too. It's like we have this one kid in here named Jaden, and he is just a prodigy. Like, he has so much promise and potential. You know, if he just continues to keep his head on straight, he's going to be a phenomenal athlete all around.
I think he's going to go to glory.
He can do whatever he wants.
As long as he doesn't get distracted, because they'll start coaching themselves when they turn into teenagers. I fear this from my own son.
Yeah. But as long as they, and even with Kaiden too, like these are just these teenage phenomenal athletes that have so much promise and potential. But he's, I appreciate the type of work that he puts in and he's progressed so far because like it's gotten to the point now that if I'm lifting weights and my technique is off, he'll be like, oh, listen, Z, let me show you. And this kid is 14 years old, mind you now. He's 14 years old. But I appreciate the things that he's able to do now because I saw him when he wasn't able to do those things. And it just gives me so much excitement to see where he's going to be, not only 6 months from now, but 2 and 3 years from now, or when he's turned 21. to see the type of growth that he's had. Because there's going to be a point in time where he's going to be able to do stuff that we can't do. Yeah. We couldn't teach it to him.
Right.
You know, it's just going to be part of the process when we do our part.
Right.
But it just boils down to, like, you have all these people around you lifting these weights and trying their hardest, and you do see those people that are trying hard and being very dedicated, and that's part of the inspirational part and part of the culture is that, you know, for 5 seconds, 10 seconds, I'm lifting these heavy weights and everybody's watching.
Yeah.
Everybody's got my back. And like I said before, regardless if I lift that weight or not, I know that I've inspired somebody else to try just a little bit harder.